This is Digital Story Podcast number 709, October 15th, 2019. Today's theme is the Sony A7R Mark IV field test. I'm Derek Story. It's big, it's beautiful, and it captures 61 megapixel files. The Sony Alpha A7R Mark IV mirrorless digital camera with the 24-70mm f2.8 G Master lens is a technology marvel. I wrapped my hands around one and spent a month using it on photo assignments from darkened haunted houses to midday festivals on the green, and today I'm going to share what I learned during those shoots. I hope you enjoy the show. So this kit that I have been toting around for the last month is the Sony A7R Mark IV and the G Master 24-70 f2.8 zoom. And it is an awe-inspiring package. I have to tell you that. I mean, just after an assignment or two, I was really feeling quite cocky with this camera, almost to the point where I felt like I could walk into any situation with just that body, just that lens, and come away with a shot. You know, no need carrying extra lenses, backup body, none of that stuff. Who needs it? This camera can take care of it. Now, to some degree, that's true, obviously, with some trade-offs. But I think the real point is that this camera, because of its technical spec, because of its build, because of the way that it performs when you're looking through the viewfinder and shooting with it, it just really makes you feel like you have a pro tool in your hands and that it was designed to come away with the shot regardless of the situation. And, you know, that's something because I'll be honest with you. When I was testing the Panasonic S1, their full frame, I did not have that same feeling. I always felt like I was, you know, fighting the camera just a little bit. Now, I'm definitely taking into account personal preferences here. And I know that, you know, that could be just the opposite for someone else. But I did not have that problem, you know, with the Sony A7R Mark IV. Right away, I felt pretty comfortable with it. I did spend some time with the menus. I did customize a few of the controls, but it didn't take long. And when I was out in the field, it felt good. It felt good to work with. So now, just in case you haven't been online for the last month, let me go over some of the basic specs before I get into my shooting experience with it. It is a 61 megapixel, full frame, back illuminated sensor. It has 15 stop dynamic range, 14-bit uncompressed RAW, and the ISO goes from a low 50 to 102,000. Up to 10 frames per second continuous shooting at 61 megapixels. Autofocus is incredible. 567 phase detection, 425 contrast AF points. Wow. Real-time tracking and real-time IAF for human, animal, and also in movie. It has an APS-C crop mode that delivers 26.2 megapixel high-resolution images. It has a 5.76 million dot OLED True Finder electronic viewfinder, and it is pretty to look through, I'm telling you. It has a high-speed Wi-Fi, 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, and it will do FTP transfer. Okay, so it's got the Wi-Fi covered. It also has Bluetooth. Has in-body stabilization, 5-axis, maximum video quality, 4K at 30 frames per second, twin SD card slots, and it is weather sealed. So it is quite a camera. Now, when you walk around with it in your hand, the grip is quite comfortable. Now, granted, I have larger hands, so someone with smaller hands may have a different experience. But even with that very large 24-70 f2.8 lens on there, the grip was big enough and the lens balanced enough to where I was pretty comfortable using it for long assignments. I didn't really have any problems in terms of the shooting experience beyond just getting to know the controls and where they are and how to find stuff. And I will tell you right now that spending some time up front with the camera, just sitting on the couch, having, you know, the instructions there and going through all the menus, making some choices in terms of customizing certain things. For instance, I customize the front dial where the grip is to do exposure compensation because I don't like the back dial, the back exposure compensation dial that I can't work easily. I like having it right there in the front. So, you know, I did stuff like that. I used one of the function buttons to turn on and off IAF. I used another function button to turn on and off the bright monitor. So it has a sunshine monitor setting, which is quite nice when you're working in a bright light, but it's too bright for the rest of the time in terms of it probably drained the battery too fast. So I put that on a function button. Obviously, ISO is a good function button setting, although that is a default function button on the back. So, you know, just spending some time with it, getting it set up the way that I wanted really helped when I got out into the field to make me feel comfortable with it. Again, as I said at the top, it's a very confidence-inspiring camera. And, you know, then you look on the back LCD and you look at the image and it looks very good. And then I open it up on the Mac and the images look good. I'm going to talk more about that. By the way, I decided to go with Capture One Pro. The latest version of it does accept the RAW files from the A7R Mark IV. So I went with that for my RAW decoder. And I was pretty happy with the results, although I'm going to talk more about those RAW files in a little bit. Yeah, that's kind of the, you know, the backdrop there. I want to get into a series of points here where I talk about the shooting experience and how I felt both before and after the shoot over the course of the month. I did about 6 shoots with it and then, of course, played around with it in between. You know, you can't have this laying around and, you know, not do something with it, right? So first point is the obvious, but it needs to be said. It is a true low light performer. I mean, absolutely. You can shoot regularly at ISO 6400 with acceptable results and not even be thinking about it. ISO 3200 is a piece of cake. I mean, really, the images at ISO 3200, absolutely stellar. You know, really, really good performer that way. And then pushing it all the way up to ISO 64000, not 6400, but 64000, 5 digits there. It is acceptable in certain situations. For instance, when I was shooting in the haunted house, it was very dim in some of the areas there, and I would shoot at 64,000. And what's interesting about it, there's definitely noise at 64,000. Don't get me wrong. There's noise there, but there's noise and then there's noise, right? There's acceptable noise, and then there's noise that just bothers you. And this was definitely acceptable noise, and in part, because the color was decent at 64,000 and because everything was so sharp, thanks to the camera lens tandem, then a little bit of noise, you would almost be surprised if there wasn't noise because clearly you're shooting in a dark situation. Talking about dark situations and contrasty situations and so forth, I was impressed with how the meter, you know, figured out all these different lighting scenarios. In other words, I wasn't having to drop it down to -1 or -2 EV in dark situations. The camera figured out that it was in a dark situation and rendered it very well. It did not overly brighten these dark rooms that I was in, for instance, in the haunted house or when I was shooting a candlelight walk. So I was impressed with that, because I thought, wow, this is nice. It saves me a lot of time having to constantly make exposure compensation. By the same token, when I was shooting a festival out on the green midday, contrasty light, sometimes people, vendors would be, underneath like a tent, and then, but it'd be really bright around them. There could be brightness on the people buying things from them. You know, so you had, you know, that kind of lighting a lot. And again, the camera did a very good job of sort of figuring out these lighting scenarios and giving me a good base exposure. And sometimes the exposure was good enough just to go with it as is. Sometimes, you know, I had to do a little work on a little recovery and highlight or shadow. But, you know, overall, I think the meter is very intelligent on this thing and does a nice job of reading the scenes. I felt like I was hitting exposure compensation a lot less than I normally do with other cameras. And, you know, that so that's an impressive thing, especially when you combine it with this ISO performance that it has. Now, I don't really recommend that you go down to 50 or even 100. It's not necessary. You can shoot, you know, right around ISO 200 with this. And, you know, that's where I thought the really good results were. ISO 100 is quite good. No need to go down to 50. You're not really gaining anything at all unless, you know, you have a specific need, you know, to open up the aperture more or something like that. Okay, let's talk about the combination of the G-Master 24-70 f2.8 with this camera. They are made for each other, right? They are absolutely made for each other. That is a good lens. It's a big lens. It's a heavy lens, but it's also a very well-made lens, and it performs really well. Now, f2.8 is a great lens to be carrying around, 24-70 f2.8. I mean, that's been bread and butter lens for pro photographers for a long time, especially wedding photographers and so forth. And, you know, this one really, you know, steps up to the plate. I notice that when I'm shooting at 70 millimeters with it, even though 70 isn't super long and a fairly wide aperture, that has softened the background quite nice. So it is a good lens. Now, when you pair it with this camera, though, just listen to some of these specifications here. The file dimensions, you know, for, you know, a file that's not cropped, 9,504 by 6,336. So a 9,500 by a 6,300 pixel resolution file. I've never shot with a camera that, you know, produced natively files that were over 9,000 pixels on the long side. So that's nutty. Raw files are around 123 megabytes per shot, so you got to be ready for that. And if you shoot extra fine JPEG, they're 34 megabytes per shot. So, you know that's going to vary a little bit depending on, you know, the scene and so forth. And I did shoot at extra fine, which was the highest quality setting for the camera. So when I was shooting RAW plus JPEG, I was capturing over 150 megabytes every time I pressed the shutter. And, you know, those do add up. In fact, you know, I usually, because I'm on the go so much, usually use a MacBook Pro with Capture One Pro to process my stuff. And right away, I knew that I was just going to have to put this particular catalog for the A7R on an external hard drive and not on my internal drive. Because, you know, you come away from a shoot with, you know, 300-400 shots at 150 megabytes per shot. That really adds up quickly. Now, in terms of taxing the computer, my MacBook Pro is not brand new at all. It's, I think, three or four years old. And it did fine with Capture One Pro. It did fine. I did not feel like the performance was doggy at all with these big files. Maybe sometimes if I hit the loop to zoom in, it might have taken a second to render. But overall, you know, browsing, editing, all that kind of stuff, no real performance hits with my rig, which surprised me a little bit because I don't have a brand new rig at all. Production machines, I'm running Catalina right now, but on the machine that I did this testing with, I was running macOS Mojave with Capture One Pro 12. Everything was fine. So it's more about the size of the files, at least with my workflow. And every time you press the shutter button, in my case, it was about 150 megabytes. Now, those JPEGs are quite good, but the RAWs are better, at least with Capture One. And in particular, where I thought the raws were better, I like the color a bit better on Capture One. Now, this could be more Capture One than Sony. And to really have a definitive statement here, I think I would need to test more on different platforms with different software. But overall, with Capture One Pro 12.1.3, the RAWs right out of the camera looked really good, and I like them, generally speaking, better than the JPEGs. However, with the JPEGs in Capture One Pro, I did get that in-lens correction, and the distortion was corrected for the JPEGs automatically, and sometimes that did make a difference, I have to say. There was quite a pop as I went from the RAW to the JPEG, in terms of correcting the distortion in the scene. So you got a little bit of a give and take situation there. I think the thing about the JPEGs that I didn't like quite as much about the RAWs wasn't sharpness or exposure or any of that. It was more that Capture One Pro's interpretation of the RAW files just had a bit more color and a bit more pop to them than the JPEGs. But because the JPEGs, and especially the extra fine JPEGs, you have so much data to work with, any correction that I made on them, was very nice. And I would not have a problem at all in most instances shooting JPEGs only, okay? For a lot of the assignments I have, are in really weird lighting conditions. So I feel like I do need those RAW files to tame some of that lighting. Which leads me to really my first big surprise with this camera, in that I thought the headroom on the RAW files, especially for recovering detail in the shadows, but a little bit in the highlights too, there was less headroom than I have with some of my other cameras. And what I mean by that, if you've ever used highlight shadow recovery on a JPEG, you know how that you go a little bit, it's okay. And then you start going too far, let's say almost halfway on the slider. Instead of really getting clean recovery, you start to get grays in the whites, right? Instead of detail recovery, and the shadows open up in kind of a peculiar way. Oddly enough, in Capture One Pro with the RAW files, I was starting to get a little bit of that earlier than I anticipated. Not as early as I would with a JPEG, but for instance, I'll tell you another camera that I use most of the time for my event work, which is the Pentax KP. And I shoot the .pef files, the RAW files for that. I usually shoot RAW plus JPEG. Those RAW files in Capture One Pro, I can go crazy with highlight and shadow recovery. The integrity of the colors and the contrast remain, and I recover all of this information. I don't get any of that weird grain or that kind of that faux HDR effect like I was getting a little bit with the Sony. So that would require, I think, more testing to really have any sort of definitive conclusion. Again, I was just using one piece of software, Capture One Pro, and its RAW profile on one platform. It'd be interesting to see, for example, spending some time in Lightroom, how much headroom there was on those RAW files, and maybe some other software as well. So for me as a Capture One Pro shooter, that was slightly disappointing. I thought the RAW should have been a little bit more editable in the highlights and the shadows. Other than that, though, I'll tell you right out of the can, the color is good. The detail is incredible. The detail is incredible on them. And overall, they're a very good file. It was really just that little bit of lack of headroom there. The autofocusing, there's not a whole lot to say about it because it's so damn good. The tracking, if you're shooting sports, this camera would be just a great sports camera. It locks in and it follows the subject moving, even if it's moving towards you, really well. The IAF is terrific. Just overall, AF performance, and I only tested the one lens, the 24-70, but I have to say AF performance was just outstanding. This is an auto-focusing beast. They've done a great job with the AF on this camera. It's also a movie-making beast, too, and if you really dig into the menus, you have all sorts of options beyond what I would ever need in terms of S-Log and things like that, to where if you're in a contrasty situation, you know, you can capture in a profile that really brings that contrast down so you get that data, and then you can recover, you know, to your tastes in post-production. Videographers who are serious about movie making should have, you know, very good success with this camera. And speaking of those menus, as I mentioned before, you really do have to spend some time learning them. Do that if you get this camera. It'll make your initial experiences in the field so much more pleasurable. If you just make a few tweaks to the buttons and dials and kind of get things the way that you want so that you know where things are. Sony menu system can be a bit hairy at times. I've never been a huge fan of it. I'm also not a huge critic of it because I shoot Olympus, and so, you know, that'd be like the pot calling the kettle black, in all honesty. But that being said, what I've discovered both with Olympus and with Sony, if I just invest a little time up front, it really pays big dividends when I'm in the field. I'm usually only making a few adjustments in the field. I don't like fiddling with the camera a whole lot. So if I have those function buttons programmed for that, and if I know what the dials are going to do so that I can work, you know, in a very fluid manner in the field, I'm a pretty happy camper. I was able to do that with this camera. And I think that little bit of time up front really helped me. Now, if I were a portrait photographer only, I'm not sure if I would choose this camera. Sports, yes. Event photographer, yes. Weddings is going to be in kind of a gray area for me. And the reason why I say that, and there has been some criticism, you know, how Sony renders skin tone compared to, let's say, Canon or Nikon. I'm not ready to jump on that wagon and say, you know, I think Sony doesn't do a good job with skin tones. I think it does. And I looked at a number of natural light portraits that I shot, and, you know, they were good. But I will say again, and this is from my experience of shooting with other cameras, that there was a certain quality to the skin that wasn't as flattering as, you know, some of the other optics and camera bodies I've worked with in the past. And it was almost like there was too much detail, not good detail, and almost like, you know, there's color contrast and there's exposure contrast. Sometimes in the skin itself, it felt like there was a little too much color contrast. In other words, if the person had any ruddiness or anything like that, it seemed to be slightly enhanced with this particular tandem. If I were going to buy this camera, and believe me, I wouldn't be against buying it if I had the budget for it, I think what I would do is investigate lenses for my portrait work that really complemented, you know, what my eye likes for portraits. I like a little smoother skin tone, even at capture. I don't want to see a lot of color differentiation in the skin. I don't want to see, I mean, I like sharp eyes, but I don't want to see, you know, a whole lot of skin texture, even for guys. You know, I basically have a look in mind. And I think what I could do with this camera is find a lens that complements the body so that it downplayed some of these things that I noticed when I was shooting with the 24 to 70. I don't think I would use the 24 to 70 as a portrait lens, even at the 70 end. Not because it didn't have lovely bokeh and, you know, all that. It does. It's just the way that it rendered the skin. For a camera that's so good, I feel like it could do better. And I feel like that was on me, and my task would be to find the right lens for portrait work. So if you are a portrait photographer, if you are a wedding photographer, and you're thinking about this camera, and there's no reason not to, especially a wedding photographer with the low light performance, then also think about and do some research about lenses that complement the way that you like to render your image so that you're happy early on, because you want to have a good first week with this camera. You want to have a good experience. You want to have that confidence inspiring, you know, shoot that I had on the first couple shoots there. And I think having the right lens with this camera would be very important for portrait work. Going back to that 24 to 70, however, I will say that it produces lovely background in bokeh. And even just shooting at 70 with a wide aperture in, you know, fairly normal situations. I'm thinking about a festival on the green that I covered. And, you know, I was shooting midday. That background softened really nicely. It looked really good. Very pleasing lens that way. When I moved in tight, like I did some work shooting some flowers close up. And then, again, bright day, because I wanted to see how the bokeh looked. The shape of the bokeh was pleasing. You know, there's pretty bokeh, and then there's bokeh that's not as pretty, that kind of thing. This, I thought, on the 24 to 70 was pretty. What's really interesting, because at the same time, the image detail and what you focused on is incredible. So you have this really fantastic image detail, and then you have this lovely bokeh soft background. Viewfinder, ergonomics, shooting experience, all very good, very good. I mean, this is a camera, it's heavy. We all know that. I don't need to go into that. The body's heavy, the lens is heavy, but it's well balanced, and you know, everything just feels really solid. The experience is good, the viewfinder's good, the grip's good. It is a well-designed camera, and you can shoot with it all day. You know, you might have to build up your biceps a bit, but you can shoot with it all day. So here's my bottom line on this camera. I have no problem at all recommending it for serious photographer work. And I'm talking about serious enthusiasts. I'm talking about pros. And I think that G Master 24-70 f2.8 is a great lens to have on it. And if I were to buy a full-frame camera right now, this one would probably be at the top of my list, in all honesty. And I really enjoyed shooting with it more than the Panasonic S1, which is a very good camera. I'm not knocking it at all. I just bonded with this camera much faster, and I just really like the results. Two big thumbs up for this camera. They did a great job, Sony did. If you have the budget for it, and if you don't mind carrying that little extra weight for serious work, it'll reward you with excellent images in most conditions, and that's really saying something. I have a link to it in the show notes. If you click on that link, you can get more detail about it. Here's a fun piece. I ran across this, and I just had to share it with you. And Micro Four Thirds shooters in particular will like this piece. It was on Digital Camera World, and it's the five fastest lenses in 2019. Now, they had seven fastest lenses in 2019, but the last two didn't really count for specific reasons, mainly not being out yet. So I whittled it down to my normal five, but these are fun. So I'm going to share with you from Digital Camera World the five fastest lenses in 2019. All of these are faster than f1.0. All right, the first one is the HandyVision 40 millimeter f0.85 Mark II. 0.85. Canon EFM, Fujifilm X, Micro Four Thirds, Sony E, and Leica L. They have mounts for all those cameras. $1,480, and I have a link to it in the show notes if you want to look closer at that. Second lens, the Mitakon Speedmaster 50 millimeter f0.95. 50 millimeter f0.95, Canon RF, Nikon Z, Sony FE, Micro Four Thirds, and the Micro Four Thirds version is only $379. The full frame version is about twice that amount. So shooting Micro Four Thirds has yet another benefit. Save you know, almost $400 there on this particular lens. Number three, the Voigtlander series, and they have a bunch of them going from 10.5 to 42.5 f0.9.5. So they have 1, 2, 3, 4 lenses in this series, right around $800, some of them more expensive, but the Voigtlanders 10.5, 17.5, 25, and 42.5 at f0.9.5 comes in number three. Number four is the Leica 50 millimeter f 0.95 a spherical lens for Leica M. That one will set you back $11,295. And rounding out our top five here is the Nikkor Z 58mm f/0.95. It's for Nikon Z, and it's at $8,000. And this one's been getting a lot of press lately because it's just been talked about. It's a little bit of a controversial lens because some people are going, hey, Nikon, your lens roadmap isn't that filled out yet for Z. Why are you introducing this now, a 58mm f/0.95 for $8,000, when, you know, I need some more meat and potatoes lenses? But at any rate, they did. It's a beautiful lens. So those are our five fastest lenses in 2019, according to Digital Camera World. All right, just a little virtual camera club news for you. First of all, I want to remind you about our LA Street Photography Experience coming this March, March 13 through 15. You can reserve your spot right now by going to The Nimble Photographer and clicking on workshops. All of our workshops are there, including this one. Our Olympus educator, Mike Baining, is our co-instructor, and we are going to have a great time. If you've never done street photography in LA, you are in for a treat. The architecture will surprise you. The deco architecture is really cool. I know some wonderful spots. The food is good. March, the weather is usually quite good. You're going to have two instructors, and we're going to have lots of gear to play with. This is going to be a fun one. If you're interested, go to thenimblephotographer.com or click on the link in the show notes. Reserve your spot now. Also want to mention we have our podcasting skills course coming up on November 9th. Registration is open at thenimblephotographer.com. Click on the link in the show notes, or there's a banner at the top of the page. You can click there. Save your spot. I'm going to teach you everything I know about podcasting, and I've been doing it for quite a while. This is going to be fun. It's going to be informative. Even if you don't want to start your own podcast, it's going to be fun to know what goes on to produce them, to get sponsors, and to get them out there in the world. A huge thanks to our Inner Circle members. We've had a few new signups lately. Welcome aboard, new members to the Inner Circle. These are the folks that I just tip my hat to every day. Every day. Every day that I go to work and, you know, the server is running and my sysadmin is happy and the site is purring away, I thank our Inner Circle members because they're the ones that help make this happen. Thank you, all of you. And I'll see you over on our Patreon site. And if you're not already an Inner Circle member, click on the Patreon tile that's on every page of the Digital Story. Go over and take a look. Pledge your support. $5 a month gets you in the Inner Circle. And I thank you all, each and every one of you. And finally, be sure to visit our friends at Red River Paper for all your inkjet supplies. We're talking about paper. We're talking about ink. We're talking about fine art greeting cards, envelopes, glassine sleeves, you name it. If it's related to printing, they probably have it. Plus tutorials, plus product reviews, plus service that you're just not going to get anywhere else. These people care about our audience in particular, and they care about printing, and they will take good care of you. There's a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Click on it and go take a look and make something beautiful. And they also have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I'll tell you that Sony A7R Mark IV is a heck of a camera. I wouldn't want to carry it around all the time, but I have enjoyed shooting with it. I'm working on some more great stories for next week. Make sure you come back and join me then. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.